This is Prop Point on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into Prop Points, Thursday edition here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you. And Jeff Erickson is wearing what I believe is that a Joey Votto jersey? It must be opening day.
It is. It is Joey Votto, my only jersey. So, let's go.
Oh, man, I wish I would have known, dude. I would have pulled out the Sabathia, maybe the Dontrell Willis. I got some in the holster,
yeah,
man, that maybe we'll have to bring out.
Brewer version of those guys, but I assume?
What'd you say?
The Brewers version of Sabathia, I assume?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
We'll bring that thing out maybe if the Brewers win today against the Chicago White Sox. But we had one game in Major League Baseball last night. We'll talk about a dominant win for the New York Yankees over the San Francisco Giants. We got 11 games coming our way. Eric Halterman from RotoWire is going to stop by to help us break down the entire slate, give out all of his favorite props. We got double guests for the second show in a row. John Henson from Field of 68, and of course, former North Carolina star, former Milwaukee Bucks standout. He's going to join us for a Sweet 16 breakdown, and then we will reveal our official plays for the VSiN betting contest to round out the show. Before we get into baseball, Jeff, just a reminder, download the Prop Point Show in podcast form. You can find it on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find every VSiN show in podcast form. So no games in action quite yet, Jeff. We are about 15 minutes away from Pirates-Mets starting up. That is Paul Skenes going up against Freddy Peralta. One of the better pitching matchups on the board. We have a low total, open 6.5, was up to 7.5, now down to 7 at DraftKings. Again, about 15 minutes from first pitch. Is this the pitching matchup you're most looking forward to today, Jeff?
It is. It is absolutely the pitching matchup that I think is the premier one on the docket there. I am looking forward to Skubal versus Nick Pivetta out in San Diego. I'm also looking forward to Eovaldi versus Christopher Sanchez in Philly, Texas versus Philly. I think those are the three best pitching matchups. Looking forward to the whole slate, though. I'm just looking forward to baseball that counts.
I could not agree more. So I know you were not a fan of just the one game last night. I saw a lot of griping about the presentation from Netflix last night. But nonetheless, we had a 7-0 Yankees win to open the season. Not a great night for Aaron Judge. He goes 0-5 at the dish, 4 strikeouts. Did not have a single 4 strikeout game the entire 2025 season, by the way. But Yankees put up 5 runs in the second, never really looked back, held San Francisco to just 3 hits on the night. Ended up being a disastrous start, Jeff, for a guy who a lot of people in the fantasy community like this year, and Logan Webb.
Yeah, and it was 7 strikeouts at least to ease the pain a little bit. But yeah, you know, ERA of over 10, a whip of 2. Tough look. The only good thing is he spread that blow up over 5 innings. The true blow up disaster outings, and they will happen to almost every one of our aces at some point, is the one where they can't get out of the second inning, can't get out of the third inning. Those are the true disaster outings, and those will happen. We'll be rostering those too. This one, we'll get by with this, but it is tough. He got BABIPed a little bit there. Like, for instance, Austin Wells' single in the second inning, it was just a bleeder that got through because they had a big shift on him, and Luis Arraez didn't have the range to get to that ball. I'm not sure any second baseman did necessarily playing from the starting point where they were at, but there's a couple of those that just dropped in, and it just kept on allowing contact. Somehow got those strikeouts eventually, and almost all of them were Aaron Judge, ironically enough, but it was a tough outing to start there for one of our putative aces.
Are you in a full-on panic if you drafted Aaron Judge in fantasy leagues, Jeff? Is he washed up?
No. Early season slumps get magnified. You see this happen all the time. A lot of think pieces, what's going wrong? Also, early season hot starts. I mean, how many in-depth articles did you read about the torpedo bat last year? After about a month, you didn't hear anything about it the rest of the season. I think that's something that we're going to be looking at there as well. That there's just a little storylines like that, because we have nothing else to ground it to. It looks like it's a lot worse than it is because he struggled late in the WBC. In addition to this game yesterday, what's wrong with Aaron Judge? Is his vision off? Is there something wrong? Should he have not played the WBC? No, none of these things should apply. He'll be fine.
So I mentioned, Jeff, the Milwaukee Brewers, one of the teams in action today. They'll start up at 2:10 Eastern at home against Shane Smith and the White Sox I woke up to terrible news on my phone this morning. Jackson Chourio not only going to miss the opener, he's heading to the IL and set to miss at least 2 to 4 weeks. Now, you know, what, 3 weeks ago, we got news that he took a ball off the hand during the WBC. Everything seemed fine. He played multiple additional games in the WBC, was back in Milwaukee, hadn't really heard anything about this over the last 2 weeks. But once this news came out, you know, we started to dive in a little bit more. And the report basically is that he played in an exhibition against your Cincinnati Reds, by the way, earlier this week, and tweaked the injury, made it worse on a check swing.
Yeah, that's right. And it's the lack of resistance sometimes there. You know, you see sometimes injuries happening like that, or you get hurt. You feel it like sometimes in your shoulder is usually where you feel it. But in this instance there, it's the hand, because it's a pre-existing injury there, and it's just too much force, I guess, there, just trying to stop it. So, yeah, tough break. I had to scramble. I used RotoWire's My Players tool to make sure I didn't have Chourio anywhere. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I had him in this keeper league. Had to scramble to get him out of the lineup just in time there. But you can check out all of our customization tools there. That really is a time saver, especially in season. My leagues, My Players, you can use that for also your free agent pickups as well in the course of the season. Very important. When you have big news like that, have to be able to react to it.
So obviously this is a blow for Milwaukee to begin the year. Nothing too major. I don't think this is making you backtrack on the over 84.5 wins. You should see Chourio back out there in a few weeks. Does anybody benefit big time in fantasy? You know, if you're sitting out there saying, okay, how do I react to this news? Is there anything actionable in the Milwaukee outfield?
I don't think so. Maybe Jake Bowers is a guy who's batting fifth today. Maybe he does benefit a little bit by being moved up in the order. Yeah, the Brewers are always a mix and match sort of team. Garrett Mitchell is in the starting lineup in center field. Bowers is in left. So those two guys, maybe Bowers is the guy that benefits a little bit from that. I wouldn't be surprised if Christian Yelich plays more outfield. So if you have Christian Yelich, that's a good thing, especially if you're in a league where, you know, you need 20 games last year or 10 games this year at a position to qualify for that. He played 19 games in the outfield last season, Yelich did. So he's DH only in most of our leagues. Maybe he gains that outfield eligibility this year because of this.
So maybe the offseason, but over on DraftKings, football never sleeps. Early bird best ball is back, and you could get in now to compete for a share of $1 million in total prizes before the season even kicks off. Best ball is simple. You draft your team once, and that's it. Each week, your highest scores automatically count. No waivers, no trades, no lineup setting. Just build your team and let it ride all season long. If you love drafting, this is your edge to get started early. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app. Draft your early bird best ball lineup for a shot at a share of $1 million in prizes. Drafts stay open until the season kicks off. So now's the time to jump in. You draft it. We crown it. Sign up now to take your shot at a share of $1 million in prizes on DraftKings Early Bird Best Ball Contest. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in New York. Call 8778-HOPE-NY, or you can just text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. 18 plus in most states. Restrictions apply. See terms over at DraftKings.com. Sponsored by DraftKings.
So, Nick, we had a pretty big night in the NBA last night. A lot of, like, outstanding performances. A lot of wild games as well. Nuggets and the Mavericks. This was a fill up the score sheet type of game. The Mavs kept this close. So that kept meaning that the Nuggets starters had to stay in longer. We saw a 142-135 game, over bettors delight.
Yeah, this is one that me and my guy Alex Barutha talked about on SiriusXM last night. And this played out beautifully. We were riding the Nikola Jokic over 10.5 assists. I have no idea why that number was lower last night than it was two nights ago, because this Denver team is just kind of perfect right now for playing overs, because they're not playing well enough that they could pull away from some of these bad teams, but they're still an excellent offense. The defense is leaky enough that they're giving up a ton of points. And like you said, the most important thing here is that they're keeping games close enough that Nikola Jokic still has to play 35 to 38 minutes most nights. So yeah, it ended up being kind of a wild slate. You know, Miami had this big back and forth game with Cleveland where they jumped out to an early lead. All of a sudden the Cavs erased that lead, and then Miami pulls back out at the end of the game. We went to overtime in Atlanta and Detroit. Boston had a huge rally in the second half to come back and beat Oklahoma City by double digits. But Jeff, maybe the craziest game of the season was Timberwolves Rockets. And this was a big game for both teams, specifically for Houston, because Anthony Edwards was still out last night for Minnesota. So like anything that happens without Ant, you know, you always have that as kind of an excuse. But Houston, man, this team needs a feel good win. They almost had it. last night. They go on a 13-0 run to begin overtime, and then they allow a 15-0 run by the Minnesota Timberwolves to come back and win this game. The Wolves, by the way, blew an 11-point lead in the final 3 minutes of regulation for this game to even go to overtime. It was a perfect encapsulation, Jeff, of what you think a Minnesota-Houston game would look like.
Exactly. And I believe I coined this phrase. We're going to put this into the universe here on VSiN as well. Both teams are freaky streaky. You know, they're teams that they're all over the place. That, you know that with Houston, that they can go on a scoring run like nobody's business, but they don't play a whole lot of good defense there. And they just don't have that thing that you know you're going to get that stop against a good team, especially in the playoffs. You've talked about how if you're a West team, you want to get that 3-6 matchup against Houston.
Absolutely. And look, I still think defense is going to be the calling card for the Rockets, because for most of the season, they've been one of the 5 to 7 best defenses in the league. That has evaporated over the last few weeks. You know, I think they're running into some depth issues. You know, I think the low hanging fruit, of course, is they don't really have a point guard. You know, we're starting to see Ime Udoka trust Reed Shepard a little bit more, but it still seems forced. It still seems like, all right, I guess I'll reluctantly play you 32 minutes, like not really going out and replacing Fred VanVleet, not bringing in reinforcements at the trade deadline. I think it's something that the Rockets are ultimately going to regret. Well, we'll try to sneak in a few more NBA plays for you. Only 3 games on the slate tonight, so we'll get to some of those later in the show. But we got games starting up momentarily in Major League Baseball. Eric Halterman, one of our baseball experts at RotoWire, he's going to join us on the Progressive Guest Line when we come back. He's got props, he's got sides, he's got totals for us on opening day. Let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. It's March, which means the madness is officially upon us, and the folks at VSiN have really gone crazy with this one. I'm being told that for just $29.99, you could get unlimited access to VSiN Pro through May 1st. I'm talking picks throughout the tournament, public betting data for every single game, plus sharp tools, projections, articles, and more, which means every day you wait is an opportunity missed. Just click the link in the description to get started. It's March, baby. All right, now back to the show.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network, getting you set for an 11-game Major League Baseball slate. We should be getting first pitch any moment, Jeff, between the Pirates and the Mets. Looking at the Mets, -122 on the money line. Pittsburgh +102 at ESPN Bet. That is Paul Skenes going up against Freddie Peralta. To help us take a look at the rest of the slate, the other 10 games, we got our friend Eric Halterman, our features editor, one of our baseball experts at rotowire.com. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Eric, the next game up for us, starting up right after we go off the air, is White Sox Brewers. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Jackson Churio not being with the Brewers to start the year. He's going to miss a couple of weeks. Not seeing that as a major impact as far as the pricing on this game. Brewers still a heavy favorite on the money line. Totals at 7.5. Jacob Mizorowski going up against Shane Smith. I know you have a couple angles you like on the Milwaukee side here.
Yeah, I do. I figured I would make you happy here, Nick, for our first segment together this season. But this is not just a homer play for you. I think that the Brewers on the run line here, you can get them at slight plus money against the White Sox. This is last year's top record in the regular season against last year's second worst team. I think this should be a pretty clearly lopsided game in the Brewers' favor, even without Jackson Churio, as you mentioned. The main reason is they have a huge advantage in pitching. Shane Smith on the White Sox side. It's actually, I guess, a cool story that he was a Rule 5 pick out of the Milwaukee organization last year, and now he gets to face them on opening day 1 year later. But he is just a guy. 3.81 ERA last year, came with some ERA estimators in the low fours. Nothing really special on his stat line. He would be nowhere close to an opening day starter on most teams in baseball. Meanwhile, Jacob Mizorowski, I'm a big fan of him this year, was one of my top fantasy baseball targets. His ERA as a rookie wasn't actually very good, 4.36, but that came with ERA estimators in the 3.50, 3.60 kind of range. Strikeout rate, 31.9%, would have been second among qualified starters last year behind only Tarek Skubal. He walked too many batters, but if you look at it on a per pitch basis rather than a per plate appearance basis, his location plus, which is some fancy new model that measures where exactly did you throw the ball, that was actually good. His ball rate, which is just simply what percentage of your pitches were balls, that was league average as well. So I think there's a little bit more there with his control. The question here is how many innings is he going to throw per start? The Brewers regularly capped him around five or so last year, but I think the fact that they're using him as the opening day starter means they know they're going to need to get more length out of him this season. And one of the things that I've looked the most at preparing for today's slate is just how many pitches did guys throw in their final spring start. Mizorowski got up to 86, which means if the Brewers want him to throw 100 today, that shouldn't really be a problem. I think that gives him time to hit some pretty high K props. At least seven or more strikeouts should definitely be in play here today for Mizorowski. And if he goes six innings, I think the Brewers are easily going to win this one by two runs or more.
One of the better pitching matchups on the slate today is the Rangers and the Phillies, where we got Nathan Eovaldi going up against Christopher Sanchez. Eovaldi, when healthy, was brilliant last year. You've got to play on the total in this game.
Yeah, I'd be looking at the under on the run line this one, and I agree with you. This is one of, if not the best pitching matchups on today's slate. I've got a lot of faith in both of these arms. Christopher Sanchez, an excellent choice for NL Cy Young this year. I think he easily could have won it last year, in my biased Phillies opinion here. He should have won it. He threw 14 more innings than Paul Skeens. It turns out it's easy to keep your ratios perfect if you keep getting pulled before you have to face guys a third time through the order. Sanchez, even with that higher workload, it was a 250 ERA, a 106 whip. Strikeout rate of 26%, not quite as high as some of the best aces in baseball, but it could have been higher. He actually had a higher whiff rate than Paul Skeens. He just gets out of at-bats quicker because he also has one of the highest ground ball rates in the league. So I don't think he's going to give up many runs against a pretty poor Rangers offense that was 25th by WRC Plus last year. And I don't think Nathan Eovaldi is going to give up many runs as well. He would have been in Cy Young contention if not for injuries, limiting him to 22 starts. So 1.73 ERA and an 0.85 whip last year. A similar strikeout rate, walk rate to Christopher Sanchez as well, and a high ground ball rate, not quite the same, but still elevated there at 50%. He had sports hernia surgery in October, but he's been healthy since the start of spring, so I'm not worried about workload restrictions here. So I don't think Eovaldi is going to give up many runs either. This Phillies offense is better than the Rangers, but it's an aging lineup. It gets mediocre pretty fast. You got Turner, Schwarber, and Harper at the top, but then you're talking Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott, Adelis Garcia. It's just not very imposing for the bottom six hitters or so. So I think this one's going to be a pretty low-scoring game.
Baseball season is here, and VSiN Pro just made it a whole lot more profitable with MLB AI player prop projections powered by Opta AI. We're giving you data-driven projections for both hitters and pitchers compared directly to DraftKings lines so you know exactly where the value is. And every day, we break it all down into top value plays and strong plays so you don't have to do the heavy lifting. You can get access now with a VSiN Pro subscription. Go do that over at VSiN.com/MLBprops. Eric Alterman, one of our baseball experts at rotowire.com, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Still don't have first pitch between Pirates and Mets. A little bit of fanfare going on with these opening day games, Eric, but let's keep piecing through some of the games later today. You just told us you like an under in Rangers Phillies. You're also looking at the under in Arizona and LA, where we have Yoshi Yamamoto on the mound against Zach Gallen.
Yeah, and we could just look at the Dodgers here, although you're not going to get a great payout on that one. The reason I'm looking at the under here is I have a little bit of faith in Zach Gallen's velocity bump this spring. Gallen was bad last year. It was a 4.83 ERA, although the ERA estimators were better in the low fours, nothing special. Not somebody you'd suggest would be pitching on opening day if he performs like that again. The strikeouts were way down for him last year. His first 6 years of his career, he was at 25% or above, but it fell to 21.5% last season. But with the velo ticking back up, there's every reason to think that he can get back into that 25%+ range with the strikeout rate. The guy who Zach Gallen was his first six seasons, a 3.29 ERA, a 1.13 whip, you'd trust him to keep the score fairly low, even against the Dodgers. Yoshi Yamamoto on the other side, I guess I'm a little worried about the fact he only got to 68 pitches in his final tune-up, so maybe he's only going to go 80 or so here. But the Dodgers have a good enough bullpen, and Yamamoto is simply excellent. One of the best pitchers in baseball, as we saw in the World Series. Whip under one, ERA 240, 29% strikeout rate, and an elevated ground ball rate as well. I don't trust the Arizona bullpen. That's the only thing that gives me real worry about the under here. So you could look instead at the under in the first five innings or some other similar prop rather than looking at the whole game.
Eric, let's talk a little Houston and the Angels. Hunter Brown going up against Jose Soriano. No Jeremy Pena in the lineup for the Astros on opening day. Remember, he's coming back from that hand injury there. I thought he might be ready for opening day. Instead, they got Carlos Correa at shortstop today. You want to dive in, though, on Hunter Brown and his strikeout prop.
Yeah, again, you could just look at the Angels, but I like the payout more on Hunter Brown to go over 7.5 strikeouts. Sorry, you could just look at the Astros, I should say. But if you're betting on the Astros, betting on Hunter Brown to strike out at least 8 Angels seems like the smartest way to do it to me. Brown was 7th among qualified starters last year with a 28% strikeout rate. He also got up to 83 pitches in his final spring tune-up, so I think he could get pretty close to 100 pitches here, which will give him time to get at least 8 Ks. And the Angels are the easiest team to strike out in baseball. At least that was the case last season, and it wasn't even particularly close. They had a strikeout rate worse than 27%. Nobody else was over 26%. Only the Rockies and Orioles were within 3 points of the Angels' strikeout rate last year, and it's swing and miss issues up and down the lineup. Mike Trout strikes out way too much now. Zach Neto, his only issue is he strikes out a bit too much. Joe Adele, he's breaking out to a certain extent, but still whiffs all the time. Logan Ohapi, major whiff problems. Their main addition to this lineup, Josh Lowe, he strikes out too. So a very easy lineup to strike out against a pitcher who strikes out a ton of batters. I think the over on Hunter Brown's Ks looks pretty good.
All right, Eric, we got about 45 seconds left. We need a home run prop for opening day. Who do you like? I know you have a name in mind for Red Sox Reds.
Yeah, Wilson Contreras to hit a home run is my favorite home run prop on today's board. I like Contreras a lot this year now that he's playing in a hitter's park for the first time in his career. He's had 6 different 20 homer seasons, including 4 of the last 5, and that's despite limited at-bats due to catching and also the fact that he's been stuck at Wrigley and Busch Stadium. He'll be in front of the Green Monster this season, which should be a great place to hit. But this game, he'll be in Cincinnati, one of the most homer-friendly parks in the league, and he'll be going up against an extreme flyball pitcher in Andrew Abbott. I like a few of the Red Sox righties here, but Wilson Contreras is my favorite home run prop on today's board.
Eric Halterman, everybody, you can find all of his work for us over at rotowire.com. He'll be a frequent guest here on Prop Points throughout the Major League Baseball season. We are underway in Pirates Mets. Already a couple runs on the board. Pirates getting to Freddie Peralta early on. We'll tell you about that when we come back. We got John Henson, former North Carolina star, currently an analyst for the Field of 68, helping us break down the Sweet 16. Coming up next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Opening day in Major League Baseball. We'll give you a quick update on the one game we have in action. Pirates jumping out to a 2-0 lead over Freddie Peralta and the New York Mets. About to head to the bottom of the first inning, but Brandon Lau with a home run to score O'Neill Cruz. So again, 2-0 Pirates getting to Freddie Peralta early, but 3 strikeouts through that first half inning for Freddie Peralta. We, of course, have the Sweet 16 starting up tonight. 4 games tonight, 4 games tomorrow to help us break it all down. We welcome back in our friend John Henson, of course, former standout at North Carolina, now an analyst over at the Field of 68. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can also catch him on the Tar Heel 24/7 podcast. John, speaking of the Tar Heels, we need to get your thoughts, obviously, as a UNC alum, on where they go from here after officially parting ways with Hubert Davis earlier this week. Sounds like they're more than willing to go outside of the UNC family. Do you think Billy Donovan is a realistic target? Is there an active head coach elsewhere in the country who would make the most sense for you?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a sad day because obviously I know all those guys, know their families, like really close with them for over 10 years. So, but also an exciting day because, you know, now we get to kind of see what that brand is going to do, who's going to be interested. As far as the coaching search, I know Dusty May and Tommy Lloyd's camps have called, right, with interest. You know, this is just kind of recently updated today. So I think those are the two guys maybe that they're kind of looking at. But obviously they have games and they're in the Sweet 16. So kind of got to meter that. Otzelberger was a guy we had on the radar as well. But I think him and the AD at Iowa State are kind of super close. So he kind of rejected our impasses, per se, initially. And then, Dark Horse Billy Donovan. I think those are the four guys that we've kind of grouped into that setting of, hey, look, these are the guys we want. Now, if we get them, who knows? It's a lot of money buyouts, but it'll be interesting to see what guys are willing to leave their cushy situations to go to this Carolina, Carolina, you go to this university and coach.
A lot of turnover in the triangle right now. Will Wade leaves North Carolina State after just 1 year, goes back to LSU. What was your reaction to that?
I would say that we don't like losing to NC State more than Duke, so I don't feel bad for anyone over there. You know, you guys had a good coach, and you guys had a good coach, and whatever happened internally, you let him get away. But I did hear there were some strife between him and the AD over there. I heard there was some internal kind of things going on between him and the upper echelon management of the school. And then I heard LSU said, look, we'll give you all the money you want to come back to this school. Obviously, the Beneath State thing going on. So it was a no-brainer. And, another kind of blow to NC State, because I was like, listen, they got a good coach. They were top 25 throughout the year. They were coming. It'll be interesting to see what happens now, which it's still a really good job, but Will Wade also has probably humbled that university. Like, hey, look, maybe not as good as we think it is.
Talking with John Henson, former North Carolina star, analyst for the Field of 68, host of the Tar Heel 24/7 podcast. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. John, I want to ask you about the NBA draft angle that we'll see in the Sweet 16 over the next couple of days. A lot of big name prospects, of course, still in the tournament, headlined by Cam Boozer. And look, you were a lottery pick yourself coming out of North Carolina. Do you have any concerns when you watch Cam Boozer about how his game will translate to the NBA level? And I know he's a much different prospect than you were. You were more of a defense first guy. He's more of an offense first guy. But, the evaluation process, I think, has changed since you came out, back in 2012. Teams are, I think, a little bit more willing to pick players apart. They're a little bit more willing to overlook college production and really try to focus on how a guy projects in the NBA. So how do you see that happening for Cam Boozer as he goes through the draft process?
I kind of treat it kind of like you got to be careful because, first of all, his dad was one of the strongest players I ever played against, right? So I'd imagine that's probably going to translate over to the next level in his career. So he's going to be able to bully cats a lot of nights when he gets of age and gets strong enough. But I think he's going to be a solid NBA player. Like, I don't think he has a ceiling of a DiBonza or a Caleb Wilson, right? But I kind of treat like Dame Lillard. Like, when I was drafted with Dame Lillard, obviously Dame was number 10, but he probably should have went top 5, right, if he could redraft. Dame Lillard kind of was what he was. Could shoot the ball really well, was really good. And, I think that's why he dropped, right? Because everyone's like, what can he improve on, right? Now, fast forward, right? Multi-time All-Star, All-NBA, right? Franchise leader. I think, yes, Boozer has his limitations. But first of all, this is the best freshman class we've seen as a whole ever. He's still going to be in the top 5. And if you look at the teams in the lottery, Pacers, Jazz, Nets, Wizards, Kings, Dallas, Memphis, these are teams he could probably go to. Like, can you imagine him with Halliburton? Or can you imagine him with the Wizards with AD or Dallas or Dallas with Cooper Flagg or Memphis with Ja Morant? So I don't think he's going to be looked upon to be like, oh, my God, carry us to the promised land. But having a guy that can shoot it, he can pass. He played point guard sometimes for this Duke offense. He screens, he rebounds. He can finish. He's got soft hands. I think he's going to be really good. Now, like I said, maybe doesn't have the ceiling of those other guys, but that doesn't matter because if you can average 17 and 11 or 17 and 10 in the NBA, you're going to play for a long time, make a lot of money, and win some games.
Talk with John Henson. John, Nebraska and Iowa play tonight. Is Nebraska looks more like the team that started off 20-0 than the team that finished 6-6, at least in the first two games of the tournament. What version do we get tonight against Iowa?
I actually, me and the boys, man, we're probably going to take this one pretty good. We're going to run hammer this one. We love Nebraska. I don't know. Just off the strength of they turned Iowa over close to 25% of the time in the last two games. Now, they did split, but if I got to take a team, I'm going to take the team that has a better defense and has turned this team over consistently for the grudge match, because if Iowa, obviously that's going to be an emphasis, let's take care of the ball, but Nebraska's defense and how they play, I don't think it's going to matter. I love Nebraska in this spot. I love the line as well.
John, looking at the Iowa State-Tennessee game on Friday, Joshua Jefferson considered a game-time call. Really hard to project at this point if he's going to be out there. But let's say he sits. Is this a game that you would confidently say Iowa State can win without him?
I wouldn't confidently say Iowa State can win this without him. The splits are kind of crazy when you look at him without, you know, Iowa State with him, without him. I mean, I think it's a 15-plus point kind of difference. On KenPom, he's like the second most important player to his team, second most important player in the team, to his team in the country. So something to look at, but I do think they can beat Tennessee without him. I'm not super worried about Tennessee than I am about the next round when they got to play those guys. But if he does play, I don't think he'll be 100%. They're probably going to, you know, shoot the ankle up. He's probably not going to feel anything, but I don't think he'll be able to move and play as effectively as he would healthy.
I'm super pumped for the Illinois-Houston game tonight, the Houston Invitational against three Big Ten teams, basically. But the Illinois, they have this link. They have this that causes problems for everyone there. Can Houston avoid that dreaded scoring drought that they seem to get in some of these big games?
You know, I lean Illinois on this one. And, you know, it's about matchups. I think this is a team, they got the size. Houston is 169th, I believe. If I can confirm that, 169th in the country in defensive rebounding. Illinois is third in offensive rebounding percentage. So they can feast on the glass. And people are like, oh, well, you know, Houston turns you over. Well, Illinois is going to get offensive rebounds. That's better than a turnover because you're getting new possessions by the rim with a defense scrambling. And then on the big side, they have the size. Tugler and Sokol tend to get in foul trouble a lot. And they're so guard reliant on Houston is it everything screams Illinois, but it is the Houston Invitational. And if you look at what Houston does in Houston, they don't lose and they shoot the ball really well when they're playing at the Toyota Center. So I lean Illinois, but this is the game of the night. I can't wait to watch.
Right there with you. John Henson, everybody. You know him from his days, of course, at North Carolina. You can catch him over at the Field of 68, as well as the host of the Tar Heel 247 podcast. Find him on Twitter at John Henson 31. John, appreciate the time, man. Enjoy what should be another fantastic weekend of college hoops.
Appreciate it.
John Henson, everybody. Again, check him out on Twitter at John Henson 31. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll give you an update, more runs on the board in Pirates Mets. We're about a half hour from first pitch between the White Sox and the Milwaukee Brewers. Jeff and I are going to reveal our five picks for the VSiN March Betting Challenge on the other side. We'll have our best bets of the night as well. You're watching Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. We'll be right back.
Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points. Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson hanging out with you for 15 more minutes, taking you up to 2 p.m. Eastern. Money Moves with JVT and Ben Stevens coming up next here on the channel. Still just one game in action, Jeff, in Major League Baseball. still in the bottom of the first inning, just one out. Paul Skene's laboring a little bit here, Jeff. Just walked to load the bases, walk Luis Robert. So it's 2-1 Pirates right now after a bit of a shaky first inning for Freddy Peralta. He gives up a 2-run homer, ended up striking out the rest of the batters he faced, but not exactly the pitching duel that we expected so far.
No, no. So Peralta gave up a 2-run homer to Brandon Lau, and it was one of those wall scrapers, barely cleared the right field wall in the corner. I think the wind might be blowing out a little bit today in Citi Field there. But Skene's, this is the thing I'm watching here. Already 29 pitches, still one out, two walks already in this one. Luis Robert, now that has got to be a Nick Whalen profile type of player, a guy that should be good that hasn't been time. The last couple of years. That's right up in your way. Him being able to draw a walk, I mean, that's not what we're paying for him for. That's not what we're looking for, but that's a good development for him, actually, in real life, if not necessarily fantasy. But yeah, Skene's really kind of struggling a little bit there right now, and sometimes command is a little bit off in these early starts. It's a beautiful day in New York, as our man on the scene, Jason Collette, told us on SiriusXM Fantasy. I know we just had another big hit here for the Mets here, a triple by Brett Beatty to make this one 4-2. So big, big development going on in that game. Both starters a little dicey in this first inning, which we thought was going to be one of the better pitching matchups of the day.
So we're dropping Aaron Judge, and we're cutting Paul Skene's in fantasy leagues as well, right?
Yes. Panic drops everywhere. Absolutely. No, obviously not. But yeah, it tough start if you started off with Skene's like that there. And he got a little BABIPed earlier in this game. There was an infield hit that kind of set this up a little bit, made a good pitch, didn't get the result he wanted. And now 4-2 Mets. So the total in this game was 6.5 opened at. I think it got bet up to 7.5 and back down to 7. So depending on where you got it, you're already in play if you're on the on that there. If you got the under, tough look.
Live total on DraftKings now 13.5. Mets just tacked on another run, by the way. So they are -4.5 on the run line, -1400 on the money line, turning into a nightmare debut for Paul Skene's in the early going. All right, Jeff, the VSiN March Betting Challenge marches on. We're on to the Sweet 16, 4 games tonight, 4 games tomorrow. So we need to make combined 5 picks against the spread. I don't know why this happened. I got to make 2. I got to make 3, excuse me. You get to make 2 of our picks this weekend. Not exactly rolling into the second weekend of the tournament red hot, but feeling good about these picks for tonight and tomorrow, Jeff. So I'll let you lead us off. You are joining our guy, John Henson, on the Illini tonight.
Yeah, I am. Most other shops, I think the official line we have is 2.5, but you can find this at 3.5 at Hard Rock here, Illinois +3.5. The Illini length, I think they're just going to provide a lot of trouble for this Houston offense. I know it. The narrative is going to be this is Kelvin Sampson's chance to finally win it. They're in Houston, all that. Illinois, they're on the same plane as Houston. They are vastly underseeded as a 3. This is a tough break for Houston to get this draw here in this game. This should be a regional final at worst. This is a really, really good Illinois team. Illinois should have been a 2, in my opinion. The RotoWire Smart Money tool likes the actual Illinois money line. There's been a lot of action on that Illinois money line. I'm going to take the simple way out, though, and just go ahead and take the points on this one there. The Illini, +2.5.
Any concern about this game being in Houston for you, Jeff?
Sure, a little bit, but that's why we're also getting this line. I think if this is neutral, this is like a pick'em to me. I think that's really the point.
I think you're right. Okay, so we are officially logging Illinois +3.5 in the contest. You are looking at the total, Jeff, in Alabama, Michigan.
Yeah, and I am. And again, we are stuck on a certain line here for the challenge. It's 175.5 in the challenge. I still like the over in Alabama, Michigan, but you can find this at a lower price now over at DraftKings at 172.5. Give me the over on this one for sure. This is a question. Does Alabama think, can they slow down Michigan? Will they even try to slow down Michigan? Alabama likes to play at pace. We've seen a lot of high scoring games with Alabama. I know with them missing players that they might be tempted to try to slow this one down, but I don't think they can. Alabama has scored 90-plus in 4 of their last 5. They throttled Texas Tech. They have looked as good as any team has the first 2 games of the tournament. But I think this is going to be an up-and-down game. I think this is going to be a lot like Alabama-Arkansas that we saw earlier in the regular season. Maybe I'm hope-casting. I'm placing the hopium on this one here. Michigan is a team that scored over 90-plus in their first 2 games in the tournament as well. I like the over 175.5 in this one.
Are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as a betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire gives you the real tools the pros use. We're talking rankings, projections, breaking news updates, data that never sleeps. Whether you're setting your fantasy lineups, making picks, or placing bets, RotoWire's award-winning insights give you a real edge. Get started today over at rotowire.com. Just use the promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Put that in at rotowire.com, 15% off anything we offer. All right, Jeff, taking a look at my three plays for the VSIN betting contest tonight. I will start us off. We're going to St. John's Duke, and I have two plays on this game. I like the total. I like a side. I'm riding with the Johnnies at 7. Number 7 in the contest. It's 6.5 at most books right now. Look, I know Duke settled down in the second half against TCU. I'm still not 100% sold on this team. I think struggling like they did for 90% of that game against Siena, that's a little bit of a red flag. I think this is a tough matchup for Cam Boozer. Duke does get Ngongba back. You know, they got him back for that TCU game. Should be a little bit more ready, I think, than he was last weekend, but still needs to work his way back up to full strength. Had 4 turnovers, 4 fouls in just 13 minutes in that TCU game. I just think we have a St. John's team, Jeff, that's playing with a ton of confidence. They can't really shoot. Somehow it just doesn't seem to matter night to night, but they attack the rim. They attack the offensive glass. They get to the free throw line. I think this is a spot where St. John's has enough confidence to hang around with Duke. They're not going into this matchup looking at, you know, Duke as this one seed that you have to play a perfect game to go in and beat them. That's not really how I view this version of the Blue Devils.
No, I'm with you on that one there. And in fact, many people in like the ESPN brackets outright took St. John's over Duke, even before we saw these first two games in the tournament there. I'm not surprised about that.
Sure.
Quick update, by the way, on Mets and Pirates. Paul Skeens did not make it out of the first inning. He gave up another double. It's 5-2 in that game. Just hit a batter. He's out. Retiring two batters. Nick, let's talk about your next pick in this challenge. It's Iowa-Nebraska. It's the Corn Bowl. You do not like a high-scoring game in this one here.
So my other two plays are unders here. I just mentioned I like the total in St. John's and Duke, and I do like the under 142 in the contest. I like the under 134.5 in Iowa, Nebraska. And this is one where you're looking at movement in the market, and you could take advantage of that in a contest like this where lines lock. The number's down to 135.5 in market, so I think you have to grab the value on the 134.5. Two regular season matchups between these two teams. One went way under, 109 total points. One went way over, 159, but only 140 points in regulation. In the second meeting, we saw both teams hit double-digit threes. Nebraska made 20 free throws in that game. Still only went over this total, 134.5 by 5.5. This is team number 231 and 261 in adjusted tempo on the year. One thing that does worry me here, Jeff, is I do think Bennett Sturts has to shoot it better. 0-of-9 from 3 in that win over Florida. That does scare me a bit, but look, there's a ton of familiarity between these two teams. Third meeting of the season. I think this is kind of a feel-it-out game in the first half, more of a defensive half-court type of battle. Both teams comfortable shrinking this game, trying to win it, you know, limiting possessions late in the second half. So I will go under 134.5 in Iowa-Nebraska.
All right, and you've got an under in St. John's Duke real quick.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, you know, I think this is a little bit more of a grinded out game. You know, St. John's is a little bit more comfortable playing quickly. Duke wants to slow it down. They're outside the top 250 in tempo. Again, I said I'm worried about the shooting for St. John's. They always find a way to overcome it. But again, they shot 36% as a team from the field in the Kansas game. Still won that game. They just find ways to hang around. But I don't see this as a spot where it's like a race to 85. By any means. So I think both of these teams are going to kind of beat each other up on the interior. I worry about Duke's ability to operate efficiently in the half court against the size and the physicality of this St. John's team. So we'll tack on that under 142 to our official plays. Jeff, let's give out some best bets of the night before we say goodbye. You are looking at a baseball prop. I got something in the NBA. I'll let you lead us off.
I think it's a good time to bet under on strikeouts. I'm going to do that with Jose Soriano pitching for the LA Angels going up against the Houston Astros. The total is 4.5 strikeouts. It's minus 130 at DK, and I'm still going to pay that minus 130 price. Houston Astros, one of the toughest teams to strike out. Plus, they have a healthy Yordan Alvarez right now. That should make it even a little bit better. Just a heads up, no Jeremy Pena in the lineup for the Astros.
I'm going to lock in that under 134 in Iowa, Nebraska. And we got to give you something in the NBA tonight. Only a three-game slate. It's not a great slate by any means. But I'm going to keep riding Paolo Banchero, who's coming off of two of the best games of his entire season. Magic are down at least two starters again tonight, maybe three if Jalen Suggs doesn't play. He is the entire offense against a very bad defense in the Sacramento Kings. So we will go Banchero over 24.5 points in the NBA. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern. Reacting to the Sweet 16, previewing Friday's games, Money Moves, JVT, and Ben Stevens coming up next.